You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and today we're off to space. Well, we're off to a space that deals entirely with space, as in the final frontier. It's NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. This is Red Ground Zero for all things Mars-related with its rovers and flying devices on the solar system's fourth rock from the sun. Here's a groundbreaking, or should I say ground landing, moment from almost a decade ago to the day when the Curiosity rover arrived at its final destination.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
Dozens upon dozens of scientists and space revelers with their blue knit tops jumping up and down like kids on a playground in front of a giant American flag, the NASA logo, and the words Jet Propulsion Laboratory, witnessing their work make an impact by every definition of the word. Well, a decade and another rover later, and Mars is still very much on the JPL radar, as are so many other NASA missions exploring all the nooks and crannies of the universe. And overseeing the future of JPL is the center's new director, Lori Leshin. She is a space scientist and a geochemist, and she's with me right now. Lori, thank you for coming on. Thank you for this tour that we're doing today.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be with you, and welcome to JPL.
So you were there, right?
I was.
When Curiosity touched down. You were in that room.
I was not in the room with the blue shirts. The scientists, you know, they keep us in a different room. But we were all screaming just as loud. And I will tell you, it was my birthday, actually. And it was the best birthday ever.
What did you do with the Curiosity? You were in a room. Scientists stay in another room.
Well, we were watching the landing in the other room. And then the interesting thing is I'm a scientist on two of the instruments, the sensors on Curiosity. So I had spent over a decade working to get to that moment when we all got to jump up and down and scream and be thrilled. But then, you know, you would think, hey, let's all, you know, go raise a glass or something. No, it's like you had a baby born on Mars. You got to go and make sure that baby's healthy and take care of it and make sure it's okay. So we immediately, after jumping up and down for a couple of minutes, went to work.
And you got to work on another rover, which we're standing in front of, sort of. Explain
right.
What we're looking at right now.
This is a model of Perseverance, which is currently on Mars. You know, Curiosity's still going 10 years later. We're about to celebrate our 10th birthday on Mars. But Perseverance landed a year ago, February, in the height of the pandemic, right? We managed to land this beautiful rover that's kind of the size of a Mini Cooper. I mean, it's like a car on Mars. And it's driving around right now in one of the most interesting places we've ever explored on Mars, looking at a beautiful ancient river delta. Just yesterday got a great new core sample of the rock from that river delta, probably the first one we've actually taken that's actually from the river delta itself.
When you say river, you know what that means.
Yeah.
Is that what it means?
It is what it means. There isn't water flowing there today, but it's an ancient river delta, one where water flowed billions of years ago. That was the idea, to go down and explore that. And we think the rocks that form at the outflow of the water could be great at capturing evidence of ancient life on Mars. And that's what we're looking for.
NASA has so many outlets across the country. Why Mars and JPL?
Yeah, JPL is really NASA's lead for solar system exploration. So exploring the planets here in our own neighborhood. You know, it's 25 years since we landed the first tiny little rover on Mars with Sojourner, landed by Mars Pathfinder. And we've basically had a continuous presence at Mars for a quarter century, learning more and more and more, and really culminating in Perseverance, this great rover. And hopefully now we're going to bring back the rocks that Perseverance is collecting.
Do we have anything from years ago when the other rovers, Opportunity and the others that went, do we have rocks from those?
No, we have never gone to Mars and brought anything back, ever. We've never made the round trip. Think about that, right? Or you think back to Apollo when humans went to the moon and returned them safely to the Earth. That was a whole big part of it, right?
And brought moon rocks back,
and brought thousands of pounds of moon rocks back. We have none of that from Mars. And so this is our opportunity. We're standing right on the precipice of that amazing moment when we're going to get to bring things back.
Again, Mars is not the only thing.
Yes.
And we've got so much to explore. You've got some exciting stuff, and you're going to take us on a tour. Shall we go?
Yeah, let's go. I'd love to show you.
So, Lori, when you look at this campus, you see the sprawl. I mean, this is a big campus.
It is. It is. We got about 6,000 people working here, hundreds of buildings, and maybe 40 missions going at any given moment.
And you're overseeing all of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're busy. We're very busy, which is a very good thing. It means that the U.S. is continuing to explore the unknown.
Lori Leshin, you have brought us to this, it looks like an atrium in the middle of a building, right?
Yep.
You call it the clean room.
Or the high bay, because it's a very high high ceiling here, many, many stories high, and all very, very clean.
And what is being made? Because I see a, I guess that's a capsule? Or
it's a spacecraft.
It's a spacecraft.
It is the heart of a mission that's going to understand Jupiter's moon Europa, called Europa Clipper. It will be launching to the Jupiter system in 2024. So in 2 years, this thing will have a bunch of sensors strapped to it and solar panels that would stretch from the toe to the crown of the Statue of Liberty.
Wow.
It's gigantic.
That's what powers it.
That's what powers it, powered by the sun. It's going to go into an orbit such that it can do many, many close flybys of this fascinating icy world, which we think has an ocean underneath the icy shell. But the question is, could something else be living below that icy shell? And again, that question, are we alone in the universe? These icy moons that might have liquid water oceans are a great target to try and answer that question.
We're in the clean area, right?
Yes.
If we were to go down there, what we're overlooking, we would have to put on suits.
We call them bunny suits.
Bunny suits.
Yes, exactly. You'd have to put on shoe covers, hair covers. You'd have to put on a beard cover.
Like Silkwood, right?
Yes, exactly. I guess we're trying to, nice reference there. Yeah, we're trying to make sure that we keep this room absolutely clean. And then the other thing that folks do who work on the spacecraft themselves is make sure they're electrically grounded so they don't cause a short in the electrical system.
Clean as in sterile?
Clean as in as sterile as we can make it, yes. And we also do care about transporting as few microbes as possible with us when we're going to study places that might have life, that we absolutely care about keeping things clean out there in the solar system.
So, Lori, we are going back to the office from the clean room. It's so elaborate creating this kind of, you know, craft.
It's very technically challenging. I don't think
I
people really realize how difficult it is to try to make something that's going to last for years, millions and millions of miles from here. And it's going to fly within about 15 miles of the surface of a moon of Jupiter. Imagine that.
Yeah. That's a long trip powered by the sun.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep. Exactly right. Long trip powered
by the
sun.
Has there been anything like that?
We have a mission right now at Jupiter that's also solar powered called Juno, which is sending back extraordinary images of the clouds of Jupiter. I urge people to go online and Google Juno images of Jupiter and find the beautiful things that we're doing.
There's not even a surface of Jupiter, right? It's mostly just gas.
Yeah, no, we don't exactly know, but yes, that's right. It's just a giant ball of gas with probably some liquid metal hydrogen towards the center.
But Europa, its moon, one of its moons.
That's right.
Does have a surface.
It does.
Yeah.
Icy surface. The moon right next to it called Io actually has a surface that's more rocky and is full of active volcanoes. It is just, it's a set of fascinating worlds in their own right. It's so great that we get to go explore them.
Well, back in the office now, here we are. And I guess I want to ask you, you know, with JPL having so much going on, you can't touch on all of it, right? But tell us about a couple of the other projects that you're most excited about right now.
Yeah, space is really big, right?
It so is, there's a lot, vast, yeah.
A lot happening. But some of the things I'm most excited about are things that are close to home. In fact, we're just launching a new instrument that's going to get bolted on the side of the space station that's going to look at minerals that turn into dust in the atmosphere. Dust in the atmosphere is one of the things that we understand the least as a driver of climate change. It could heat up the atmosphere or it can cool down the atmosphere. And so we need to understand that much better. This instrument is going to help us do that. We're launching a mission called SWOT later this year that's going to help us understand surface water around the world, measure surface water in rivers and lakes everywhere for the first time from space. Really, really exciting things that are so important to helping us understand our climate and how it's changing.
Let's talk a little bit about Capstone, because this is part of the Artemis project, right, that would send astronauts back to the moon.
Right.
Can you give us sort of a brief outline of the next steps and the timeline for Artemis?
Sure. I mean, Artemis is going to be happening in the next few months, the very first launch of the Space Launch System, the very first Artemis mission. And we'll start to see much more regular launches of this very large, very impressive rocket taking astronauts back to the moon and ultimately onto Mars. So it's going to be a very, very exciting time. Think about it. For the first time in decades, we will be sending humans beyond low Earth orbit out into deep space. It's an extraordinarily exciting time.
This is like Neil Armstrong, right? Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin kind of stuff.
Yeah, this time with, you know, some women.
Women. A woman's never walked on the moon.
Never has. A person of color either. And so we're excited to see both. Yeah. Happen.
Can I talk to you about being a woman? You think of space exploration from the 50s and 60s, right? And you think of men with, you know, crisp white shirts and the pocket protectors and the T-squares and all that.
Yeah.
You probably remember those images too.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's better for women. How much better? Is there still work to be done?
Absolutely, there's still work to be done. I mean, I am the first woman director in the 85-year history of this organization. And so there are still barriers to be broken. We've not had a woman head of NASA. You know, there's opportunities here for women to still go higher. But we've got to look at the systems that we have in place. And that's something that I'm excited to dive into here at JPL and really understand. Are the systems that we have in place supporting all the brains, all the brilliant people who are here, who are working to contribute to our mission? Or are there some changes that we need to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to do their best work here?
The private marketplace is also involved in space. It didn't used to be, but now we've got so many different companies. I know Elon Musk has SpaceX, and we've got Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin. You've got Boeing and other companies as well. Makes it a lot less expensive, right?
Certain things that the commercial sector is able to do to take those things that are repetitive, like, you know, shuttling cargo and now crew up to the International Space Station over and over again, it's great that we can get the commercial sector more deeply engaged in that and give them the autonomy to do it really creatively and less expensively. And that's great. And I was actually involved when I was at NASA a decade ago in starting the commercial crew program that now is flying astronauts to the station. I'm really proud of that. What JPL does is first of a kind, one of a kind. We don't want to build 30 of something. We want to build the one exquisite example of this thing that's never been done before, where there frankly is not a lot of profit to be made. And so that is our role. And I think there's room for both.
And the growing privatization of space, a good thing.
I think overall it's a good thing. I think you have to be smart about how you go about it. You've got to make sure that we've got the right policies in place. But opening space to everyone is an amazing thing, and I think it's wonderful.
There are obviously other planets in the solar system.
Yes.
The only one that's closest to us and maybe could be inhabitable is Mars. Maybe. Is it worth doing all this exploration if there's not habitability on these other planets?
So Mars is interesting because it is a place that humans could go potentially live. I think they could probably live on some other objects as well.
Yeah.
But the opportunity to answer an even bigger question, which is, are we alone in the universe? I contend that the next 15 years are going to help us answer that question. Almost certainly we will be able to in that time frame. And that could be Mars. It could be one of these ocean world moons orbiting Jupiter or Saturn. It could be in a planet around another star, not our sun. And we are exploring all those environments in the next decade, decade and a half, trying to answer humanity's most fundamental scientific questions, to me, is an endeavor worth pursuing.
I asked you that question, and your eyes just lit up. Like, this is what
it,
seriously, this sounds like this is your thing.
It is. So we've got to go explore those places so that we can get at the answer to that most fundamental question, are we alone?
Are we alone?
Are we? I would love to know the answer. That's why I came here. Let's answer that question.
I still see your eyes lighting up.
I love it.
You're
I'm
really
a science
excited.
Geek. I admit it.
Lori Leshin, the new director of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab here in Pasadena, La Cañada, Flint Ridge. Lori, welcome to LA and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
While Leshin and her team sprint toward new worlds, meet another trailblazer who just ran from Florida to California. That's yours on the other side of this.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Maybe you get out and jog or run a few miles a week to try and stay fit. Maybe you take it more seriously and you run most days. Full disclosure, this is definitely not me. I like to walk. It would take an emergency to get me to move any faster than that. And this is a story about someone who has just run a seemingly impossible number of miles to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, how do you
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Emily Haig arrived in Santa Monica last Sunday after completing a run of some 2,500 miles from Jacksonville, Florida. She did it to benefit and bring attention to the group called Students Run LA. And because, well, she just wanted to. And Emily Haig joins us right now. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How you feeling? Are you still resting?
Actually, I've gone to the gym the last couple of days because I figured I've run so much, I better go do an arm day or something.
Right. You did a lot of leg days, didn't you?
Did a lot of leg days. My legs are tired. My legs get a break.
How do you prepare your body for something like that, doing that many miles? And how long did it take you to get from Jacksonville to L.A. or to Santa Monica?
Yeah, well, I've been running marathons and ultras for a few years, and so I kind of had a little bit of a runner's base, but I really started putting in the training a few months before I went out there and really started putting on long miles in the trails around Los Angeles and then flew out there, and it took me just under 3 months to get back, so it took me 85 days to run across the country.
Did you do it along roads, surface streets that are not very crowded? Did you do it along the freeway? How did that go?
Yeah, so mostly highways. It ended up being pretty much all the way across Florida. I followed Highway 90, and then I was on Highway 87 West, all the way from Alabama to the middle of Texas, which was a pretty nice highway. It wasn't super busy, had a nice shoulder. And then after that, all the way through Texas was a mix of farm-to-market roads, and then it was back to highways, and actually a lot of frontage roads on along I-10, but stayed off the freeways.
I mentioned at the outset that, you know, well, you just wanted to do it, right? But there was a mission here. You were trying to draw attention to this group, Students Run LA. Talk a little bit about Students Run LA.
Well, I'm just so inspired by the students who participate in this organization. Essentially, when I moved to Los Angeles, I ran the LA Marathon. And as I was running, I saw all these high school kids running. And I thought, are these high school and middle school students really running a marathon right now? I was thinking back when I was in high school, you couldn't have made me run a marathon to save my life. And I got to the finish line, and then I heard someone over a loudspeaker say something about how Students Run LA had over 3,000 students run the LA Marathon. And I thought, that's so cool. I have to find out what this organization is. And if they need any help, I want to get involved. I had done some coaching for a high school cross-country ski team when I lived in the Midwest. And so I love coaching and I love working with young people. And I was just so personally inspired once I started working with them by all these kids and their attitudes and just getting to run with them all the time. That was so motivating to me that as soon as I decided to do this run, I thought, well, I want to do it for charity. I want to do it for a good cause. And it just was a no-brainer. I absolutely wanted to raise awareness and funds for Students Run LA.
And these are kids from like all over, you mentioned all over Greater LA, but of all incomes and different backgrounds and right, just kids maybe who wouldn't have an opportunity to have those kinds of things to be able to run or to learn how to run or even know how to do this.
Absolutely. And that's why I love it. There's just such a diversity in backgrounds, skill levels, just everything. Yeah, socioeconomic backgrounds, so many different schools, and there's no really criteria you have to meet. You know, it's not like you have to try out for a team that you may not get on or anything like that. It's anyone who wants to participate gets to participate. So whether you have run a half marathon before or not, doesn't matter. You've never run in your life, doesn't matter. You can come to Students Run LA and get the coaching, and anyone can do it, which is just, it's astounding to watch it really. I've always told my friends who say, oh, I could never run a marathon, I could never do what you do. And I say, no, go watch a marathon. Like, you'll be blown away. Kids who have never run and aren't super athletic or, you know, whatever it is, that just can come and finish the LA Marathon.
We talk about, you know, the raising of money. Was there any metric? Do you know how much money you raised?
I'm not sure. It's still ongoing. There's still people who have, now that I've actually finished it, are going on there and donating. So I'm not certain, but there's all kinds of ways to donate to Students Run LA. You can donate through my cause by going to, like, I have a link on my Instagram.
What's that Instagram?
So it's at Emily E. Haag. That's EmilyEhaag, all one word. And my link is right there in the bio. It's kind of long, so you can just click the link right there.
We'll have it on our website, too.
Yeah, otherwise, Students Run LA, there's lots of ways to get involved. You know, they have like a Friends of Students Run LA program, and all of that is available through their website.
Did you meet any interesting people along the way? You mentioned some of the trails that you took. What about going through towns, and did they understand what you were doing?
I just met the most amazing people out there. So many people were really helpful.
Your parents went along too, right?
Yeah, they were a support crew along the entire route. And they drove a truck with a camper in it and brought me water and all kinds of things that I needed.
What do you take from this experience? Did you get a lot of Forrest Gump jokes?
Every single day. If a day passed and I didn't hear a Forrest Gump joke, I was a little bit disappointed.
Of course, because wherever you were going, you were running. And I want to thank you for your time, Emily, and congratulations to you. I was going to say get some rest, but you've already been to the gym. My goodness. Emily Haag, who just completed a 2,500-mile run from Jacksonville, Florida to Santa Monica, California. Congratulations, Emily, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Run, Emily, run. See, I had to do it. I know. I'm so sorry. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, with a lot of folks COVID testing at home, LA County is relying more on wastewater testing in addition to all those nose swab tests. So, what kind of numbers are they? What about possible indoor masking mandates for LA County? We still don't know today, but that decision is expected to be announced by public health tomorrow. So we'll have that for you tomorrow on GLA. Always online, by the way, at kcrw.com/GreaterLA. What's on your mind? What would you like to hear as a story on Greater LA? Sign up for the podcast, too. You don't have to wait for 2:30 and 6 o'clock every day. You can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Rebecca Ludman, Sonia Guys, Phil Richards, Jay Siebold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Jody Adler, and Christian Bordahl. All made this evening's episode possible. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your time and, of course, those ears. Have a great night.